Down to Dunk Podcast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Down to Dunk Podcast. It is the 29th of January. It is a somewhat cold day here in Oklahoma City. I'm not sure what it is for our guest. Our guest today is Ethan Sherwood Strauss from ESPN, True Hoop, Bleacher Report. He resides in Oakland. How is the weather in Oakland, Ethan?
It's balmy, but I'll take it considering what I've seen on the TV and other places. I'll take the balmy weather. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, and I've heard from, you know, many sources that that area where you live, kind of San Francisco, Oakland, is one of the most beautiful places in the entire world. So I'm sure that balmy there is, you know, something I'd take too.
It's an indignity out here, actually, compared to the regular. No, it's a, you know what? I'm from San Diego originally. So this weather most of the time seems like trash to me. It's all dependent on where you're from. That skews your perspective completely.
I guess that's true. I haven't been to San Diego. Only place in California I've been is L.A., so I don't know if that gives me any right to say anything. So
it's similar, a little less smog, but essentially pristine weather, the kind of place where you can wear shorts 365 days per year, and it gives you an unrealistic picture of what scenic is or what the mundane is. I remember when I was stretching in PE in middle school, We just sort of in from our view, and I just remember gray whales were spouting on a 70-degree day, swimming by in the ocean, beautiful sun shining, blue skies. It's not always like that. I discovered that when I moved to New York for a year.
That's amazing. Well, we've got a bunch of questions for you today, and obviously you work a lot with Golden State, and you spend your time there focusing on Golden State, so we'll talk a little bit of Golden State, but the primary, I think, NBA storyline for today, and especially here in Oklahoma City, is this regular season game that tips off at 6 o'clock here, 4 o'clock for you. So you'll just be, I guess, done by the time the dinner starts. But for us, the Thunder and the Heat play in Miami tonight. And the big storyline is obviously Kevin Durant versus LeBron. So we have a bunch of questions about that. And so we'll just get rolling right here off the top, and I just wanted to kind of hear your thoughts for a regular season game, what your thoughts were kind of as a this game is coming up here tonight between the Heat and the Thunder.
I'm excited for it. It's rare that you can get super excited for a regular season NBA game in the way you can with this one, and it didn't look like we would when Westbrook was out. You thought that, oh man, they're going to go into a downturn without him. It's going to fall apart like in the playoffs. But with Reggie Jackson not being necessarily as good as Westbrook, but being a better defender, which allows them to survive without him, they're competitive. So it should be a competitive game with the Heat. And as talked about and headline sports news as Durant versus LeBron is, it's still a great debate point right now because It's sort of confusing. We're at a point where Durant has been better this season. He's been objectively better this season than LeBron James. So it begs the question, has he just passed him? Are we overreacting to a short-term trend? And I guess tonight is going to be more evidence, and that's why everyone's watching.
So you kind of alluded to it a little bit. So right now in your MVP race, you have Kevin Durant number one, you have LeBron number two, and then kind of the rest of the field three through whatever. Is that correct?
That's essentially correct. I might go David Lee number two, but you know, that's just that's the order. That's the order right there.
Sure. And you know, it's one of those things where everybody's so from my perspective, it looks like everybody tips toes so much around it because they do still believe that LeBron's the greatest player on the earth, but just right now Durant is playing better. And so it seems like there's just a tiptoeing. Nobody wants to full on admit that maybe Durant is the leader right now.
That's a great way to characterize it. Nobody wants to jump the gun. It seems as though for all we talk about how Twitter is this bastion of irrationality, I should say, it almost makes people gun shy because then you don't want to be the pundit who says the thing that's incorrect and everybody lambasts you. So everyone's almost too careful. For as much as we mock the hot sports take culture, you don't really see a whole lot of hot sports takes. People don't want to get out in that limb. But I would say this. I don't know if Durant is better than LeBron now, or if he's passed him. But there will be a point at which, in all likelihood, he becomes better than LeBron because he's younger. Because his game also will probably age, there will be a point where Durant is better than LeBron, and there will be resistance to admitting that it's happened. I just don't know if that's right now. I don't know if anybody can know it, but we do know that he's submitting a better regular season than LeBron is.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard for us, you know, and it's the same thing, I think, with LeBron. It's the same thing with the Heat. Like, until you beat them, I will always pick the Heat. And so that's kind of what we go with for tonight. And so what do you think about tonight? Let's ask, like, what are some keys that you think are important for the Thunder to come out victorious? What are some things that you think the Miami needs to do in order to be come out with the win? And then what are your predictions for tonight?
Yeah, it's so funny because I'm so focused on this individual battle that I hadn't done my due diligence. I'd scarcely thought of the contrasting and competing styles and what needs to be done. I guess the key, I want to see how the Heat guard Durant, because they don't really have a good option. So you almost wonder if they should waste LeBron on Durant, if they should waste his energy pursuing that, because Durant, and it hasn't really been spoken about, he kind of torches. He torches LeBron. He torched him in the finals. People don't remember that because if you win the finals, that's all people remember, and therefore everything you did was great and everything the opponent did wasn't enough. But when Durant was guarded by LeBron, he scored effortlessly. That's always a good word to make you sound like you're drunk when you say effortlessly. It's really tough, insanely tough. But so I want to see, are they going to throw the overmatched Battier on Durant? How are they going to handle that? Do you even double team him? We know that the Heat like to do a lot of trapping and throwing guys at KD, and maybe that's what you want to do because the other Thunder players might not be able to score individually if you throw that double team on Durant on the pass. That's what you have to do. You have to give him the double team on the pass. You can't let him get going. If you let him get going and start dribbling, then you're dead. That's death. So that to me is one of the keys. Obviously, the Thunder have a bit of a similar situation guarding LeBron. Thabo Sefolosha is good at guarding wings, and he's the correct wing to guard LeBron, say, back in Cleveland. Cleveland LeBron, Thabo's good for guarding him. This LeBron, he's kind of like a bug on a windshield now that LeBron has that post game. He can just bludgeon Thabo, and he does. So does that mean they go with Durant on LeBron? Is that a struggle for Durant? Durant's had a really good season defensively, and people haven't come around to it yet that he's improved on that end. So this might be a good showcase for it. So there are a lot of moving parts here, talented teams, both sides. I wonder if we'll see Odin. That would be interesting, or if they even have need for him. I doubt it. Since they don't exactly have a big center to contain. So I'm just excited. I don't know what's going to happen, man. That's why I'm watching.
Yeah, well, and kind of this will lead into another question. The biggest X factor question mark for me in the Thunder is, what does Serge Ibaka do tonight against Chris Bosh defensively? But also, he can score when he's shooting the ball with confidence and when he's playing within the rhythm of the offense. And so that kind of leads me to this question that, what's the general national opinion of who Serge Ibaka is and the step he's taken this year? And then what would you say that he could bring to the Thunder tonight, but also more importantly for the playoffs? And what would you want to see out of him?
I think the general opinion on Ibaka is that he's overrated, which now makes him underrated. That's my take on it, because he became the archetype of gets blocks but isn't really good at defense, and he was kind of that guy for a while. He would bite on pump fakes, he would fly all over chasing the block and not playing stout D and keeping people out of the lane. He would catch people by surprise, and that's why his block numbers are so high. But what he wasn't doing was kind of representing. I like to think of it like poker. You're representing aces, you're representing kings to maybe force the other guy to fold. He wasn't representing aces or kings. He wasn't stepping into the path of drivers and making them think twice and using that threat and intimidation factor of the block shot to his advantage. This year he's doing that. I think he's such a good defender this season, and that's one of the reasons why they're one of the best defensive teams. And this could be a good showcase for him. Is he going to bite on those Chris Bosh pump fakes? Maybe he won't this time. Maybe he's more disciplined. I think we'll see a better defensive effort from Ibaka in the finals and in other instances.
Well, that's our hope, I think, as well. It's one of the most intriguing things about tonight to me is to see what he can bring. So I got two more Thunder questions, actually three more, excuse me, and then we'll move on to some Golden State. If you had to choose a nickname for Kevin Durant between the Slim Reaper, Durantula, or KD, what's your choice?
The Slim Reaper, that one's fantastic. And I don't understand the nickname snobbery where whenever somebody comes up with a nickname, everyone goes, oh, no, no, no. It could be anything. People just want to assert that they're cooler than the nickname. That's what's happening here. All those nicknames are fine. All of them are good. I'm cool with all of them. Especially love the Slim Reaper. I know Durant doesn't love it because he's a little sensitive about being skinny, perhaps. He has some of that going, so it's not his favorite thing in the world. But it's an awesome nickname.
I think that's the general consensus of fans here, I think, is what it, there's already t-shirts being made, and it didn't take very long for us to just love that nickname. But
that's awesome.
So the other question I have, Scott Brooks got voted or not voted because of the record of the Thunder last night. They said that he is the all-star head coach for the Western Conference. And for Thunder fans, we have such a love-hate relationship with Scott Brooks. And I feel like my personal belief is I struggle with him more than I probably love him. What's your evaluation of who Scott Brooks is for this team and what you kind of think you would grade him out as for the year?
I'm not really a Scott Brooks guy, and perhaps I'm selling him short because I can't see what he does in practices, and I can't see what he does developmentally, because those players, they just get better. The young guys, they grow by leaps and bounds in a way you don't see on any other team aside from the Pacers. So that might be Scott Brooks. It might be. I just don't know how it would be. What I don't like is the steadfast refusal to move away from Perkins in the lineup, which really hurts them. And it can't be made a big enough deal of that. It cost them a finals. Playing Perkins against Bosch murdered them in that finals, and there was no reason to do it. And so I'm not a big Brooks guy. It's possible that considering all their success and they've managed to weather the storm of Westbrook being out, that I'm not being fair to him. I'd give him a B, but I do that, and I say that while allowing for not knowing the complete story and perhaps underrating him.
Yeah, I think, you know, I try to have a objective viewpoint of him, but every time that he plays Perkins for 30 minutes a game or Derek Fisher for 25 minutes a game, it's hard for me to get over those decisions for him, especially the Perkins one. It just makes no sense to me, especially against a team like Miami. And I appreciate you bringing up all the heartache that I lived with for the offseason, where I realized that if they could have maybe just played a power forward and not a center like Perkins, they might better shot in that series. So I appreciate that. That's good.
Yeah, they weren't far from winning it. It was a 5-game series, but it was really close the whole way. So something like that could have turned it. And everybody going into that knew that Perkins had no shot at guarding Bosch, and it just was clear after the first game, after the second game. And how do you not go away from that? So that still sticks with me. Maybe he's evolved, maybe he's grown, but I'll always be suspicious of Brooks because of that.
Yeah, and he was, for a team that moves as quickly as the Heat does or do, he is so slow, it just puts him immediately at a defensive disadvantage on their transition. Anyway, so, sorry, I could spend the whole podcast talking about Perkins, and I don't want to do that.
I could do.
All right, well, let's move on. Well, one last Durant question. Let me just read you the next few games they have up until the All-Star game, and I want you to give me your thought on when the streak of three-point games will end. So they play at the Heat tonight, then they go to Brooklyn, to Washington, at home for Memphis, at home versus Minnesota, at the Magic, versus the Knicks, at Portland, and at LA.
Wow. What if I chose Brooklyn? Because they play such a slow pace that he won't get the shots up. And if Kirilenko is healthy, I think Kirilenko, Durant will still get his points and he'll still score, but he's one of the guys better suited to handling him just a bit. So my pick will be Brooklyn.
All right. So he's got one more game tonight where he'll score 30, and then streak will end this weekend in Brooklyn. All right. It's our Golden State section of this podcast. And I have to say something to start this out. The two other guys that did the podcast with me, are, one of them is I think he's a Marshawn Brooks fan in joking only, but yeah. I think he he wanted me to ask some questions about why Marshawn isn't getting any playing time, which may be part of Golden State's problem. So what do you think about Marshawn Brooks?
I think they don't trust him to help them in a delicate situation where they're not getting anything from their bench. They might reach a frustration level where they go, let's just roll him out there because we're getting nothing. I will say this for Brooks. Whenever I'm in the locker room pregame, he is watching and breaking down film as though he's going to play, as though he's ready to go. And I admire that. I admire guys who are professional and stay ready, even if they have little to no expectation of being able to showcase that in a bigger stage. So he's ready for it. If they throw him out there, he will have the opposition.
Yeah. So what do you think? You said we talked about a little bit of a Twitter, not almost rant on Golden State. And obviously they lost last night to Washington. It's, there's a growing concern a little bit of what Golden State losing to some teams they shouldn't lose to at home. So what do you think, just kind of in a summary way, what do you think are some of the bigger issues facing Golden State right now?
Well, it's a little confusing because people don't know what the proper expectations should be or can be. If you just say, hey, I'd be happy if the Warriors make the playoffs, then you can't be that concerned. They should probably make the playoffs. But if you're expecting championship, then yeah, you should jump out a window because it's looking pretty bleak. They've got some issues. I think that, you know, that starting lineup that they have with Bogut, David Lee, Iguodala, Klay Thompson, Curry, it was killing the opposition, and they made a big old deal of it. David Lee's printing out full squad shirts. They're making a meme out of full squad this, full squad that. Well, what goes up must come down a bit. They are a good starting lineup, but they weren't as good as they were representing. And also, they got a little bit hurt. Bogut's got something. Lee crashed into Hibbert, and he hasn't been the same since. So they aren't as effective. The bench is not good, especially offensively. And frankly, for all that they're touting the starting lineup, I think it lowers their ceiling. I don't think it's a championship starting lineup. You have a ceiling. When you have David Lee as your power forward, you have a ceiling. Now, Bogut makes up for a lot of the bad defense, and so does Iguodala, as well as the bad defense of Steph Curry. But you're also not getting an optimal situation spacing-wise because he can't shoot the three, so you're not stretching the floor. One of the reasons why they blasted the Nuggets is because they finally stretched the floor. They have Steph Curry, who operates a lot like Steve Nash, as a great shooting threat who can get teammates open that way. If you have the next Nash, you should give him Nash spacing. You should space the floor with four out because he's not going to make something out of nothing. He's not going to slash in there when you have three three-point shooters in the way that, say, Westbrook might. So I just believe that they're not going about this the right way strategically, and if they really want to ascend to the heights that their fans want, they're going to have to make a deal, and that's probably going to include Lee. I know that sounds bad when you're saying trade this guy. If for David Lee, I wouldn't like me in saying as much, but that's just how I feel about it.
So you mentioned somebody you would be willing to part with. Who would be a piece or somebody? You have any specific names that you think would be somebody you would pursue if you were a GM for Golden State?
Well, I liked going after Ryan Anderson before that awful injury, of course, and that was a name just because they seem to be a team that fixates on names. They wanted to get Jrue Holiday because he's an all-star. So you get him. Of course, he's an all-star in the East, which means that he's not going to be an all-star once you bring him to the West. He wasn't an all-star the second you brought him over to your team and touted him as an all-star. So maybe that could be revisited, perhaps. You just need to see if Anderson's health is okay and check into that one. So I like that. One potential deal that would be interesting is if you did a straight up deal for Lee and Lul Deng and just played Deng as a stretch four and played crazy defense with Bogut, Deng, and Iguodala in one starting lineup. That would be interesting. I don't expect them to do any of this. I expect them to just remain with this approach and commit to their initial plan. But those are two deals that I would investigate.
I like that Deng one because of the, you know, everybody's going small today. Like, very few teams have legitimate centers. You'd have some trouble against the Rockets, but, you know, really other than that, you'd be okay in a series with having Deng as your four. And I don't know, I kind of like that move. Like you said, they probably don't make any moves now, I guess. But so speaking of kind of these struggles, I was not a fan of the Mark Jackson hire. And it just didn't make sense to me. He didn't have any experience coaching. He was just a commentator at that point. He kind of drove me crazy as a commentator. And I've been sold a little bit more on him than I thought I would. What, as an Oakland, you know, native, as a fan of the team, or maybe a follower of the team, what is your evaluation of how Mark Jackson's done as the coach?
Well, I can't get any consensus on it. There's such a broad spectrum of opinions when it comes to Jackson. I think part of that is because culturally he doesn't send the right signals to the fan base. It's a fan base that's rather secular. It's Silicon Valley, it's tech, it's Stanford, it's Berkeley, it's all of that. And he'll talk freely about God and religious stuff that, well, I'm sure we have a lot of religious people in the Bay Area as well. There's a significant portion of people who are reacting. What are you doing? Why are you talking about this in a basketball setting? So there's some of that. There's some of what you talked about where the inexperience made people wary. Last year, I thought he did a great job. The defense improved. He showed a certain open-mindedness that he wasn't credited for, where they switched up the defense. They didn't have their bigs rush out and hedge on pick and roll. They dropped back instead, totally changed the strategy. It improved the defense. And then when David Lee went down, he didn't just go with a lesser version of Lee with Landry. He changed the approach and he went small. And that's what ultimately won the series. So I give him a great grade for that. This year, he's been a little bit disappointing. They have Iguodala, who should be their backup point guard. They haven't played Iguodala at backup point guard, and that obviated the need for Tony Douglas. They signed him to basically, I think, play off the ball next to Iguodala because Douglas can't run backup. And Mark Jackson runs him out there as a backup point guard with a bunch of guys who can't create their own shot. It was a total disaster. And he isn't revisiting what worked so well in going small in that series against Denver, kind of writing it off as some sort of aberration. And that has really killed opportunities for Harrison Barnes, who seems to only succeed in a small ball lineup. So I don't like a lot of what he's done on the periphery. Not only that, they're doing way too much isolation basketball, gumming up the offense that way, especially with Barnes, where he's not even that great of a post-up player, and they feed him in the post, and it's been a disaster. So I would give him a C. You know, the team hasn't been awful. They've been good defensively, but offensively, they've been a lot worse than they should be.
And you brought up Harrison Barnes, and he's one of those guys to me that has played at points this season and last season. He's played better in the NBA than I thought he was, you know, playing for North Carolina. So what do you see out of him? Because he seemed to have disappeared here the last couple weeks, and maybe that goes to what you were just talking about. So do you see Harrison Barnes as an important piece for the future of this franchise?
Increasingly, it's looking bleak. It's looking grim. I hate to say it. You don't want to say that about a young man who works really hard and wants to be a great basketball player. And I think we could also assume that if he was on the Thunder, he would automatically become fantastic, because that just tends to happen. But it's not looking great. And the regret is going to creep in if it continues down this path, because they missed on some guys they could really use, Jeremy Lamb included, on the Thunder there. John Henson, Andre Drummond, that's a big one. That's a big one to miss out on. And it's not fair to perhaps hold him to those standards of those guys who are really great, but he's a tweener currently who doesn't quite fit in. They're not playing him at power forward. He's perhaps not big enough to play it regularly. He doesn't have the handle of a perimeter player. His passing vision is subpar. He's a ball stopper. And defensively, he's been worse than he was last year. So I'm not sure what's going on. He might be a little bit hurt, but if I had to guess, he's just not going to be an above average NBA player. I hate to say it.
Yeah, it's hard because there are points where he looked, you know, I think earlier in the Thunder game against the Warriors, he looked great at times. And it's just weird to see him regress like he has in the last couple of weeks. But that happens, I guess, from time to time. So let's talk Western Conference real quick. If you can give me kind of your rundown of how you think it shakes out, who gets home court in the first round, and then from there, talk about who you think is in the Western Conference Finals and who comes out of it. Maybe some of their performances. It feels like the East is catching up a little bit. And some of your general thoughts of the Western Conference.
Yeah, so much of it is going to be – it's going to be separated by a few games at the end. And I can't foresee it. But in terms of title contendiness, as I like to say, I like Oklahoma City, obviously, as the favorite out West. That's rather obvious. And it's funny. There's all this hand-wringing among San Antonio fans, and I get it. But almost by default, you'd have to put them second, right? They haven't totally impressed. They haven't beaten any great teams, and their starting lineup hasn't been that good, but they're solid offensively, solid defensively. They have the experience. Almost by default, you have to name them as that second team, even though I suspect we wouldn't be doing that had Westbrook not gotten hurt last year. You know, like, would we be doing this with San Antonio had OKC made the finals? It seems as though we're spotting them a lot of credit because they almost won it and were helped along by an injury. But I would still put them second. And then it gets really dicey. For me. You know what? I kind of believe in Portland. I know people go they don't have the defense to do it. I like teams that can shoot a lot of threes. I enjoy that, and it allows you to beat a potentially better team. So I wouldn't take them third. I'd probably put them fourth below the Clippers, Houston fifth, and then Golden State, sadly, I have to say. And then after that, I don't know if it really matters. Memphis after that, even though they're not, if the playoffs are today, they're not in the picture. And then Dallas. Dallas I don't take too seriously because they're not as potent offensively as Portland, but they have Portland's defensive problems.
Yeah, it's weird. Dallas is such an odd lineup that it's hard for me to really see them being successful, but they are. They're playing well, and Memphis is playing really well since Martin Gasol came back, and they feel like they're kind of just turning into the team that they're supposed to be. So out of that, do you have Oklahoma City coming out of the Western Conference as the champion?
I would say that I've got OKC favored, nearly favored against the field, but not quite. That Westbrook injury throws a little bit of doubt into the situation.
So if you were to be able to predict somebody from the East, sorry, switching gears just a little bit. If you had to pick between Indiana and Miami right now, who would you choose coming out of the East?
I'd go Miami. I don't feel great about it because it goes back to that, do you believe the regular season data in this LeBron versus Durant argument? And in this case, I don't. You know, I think we might over-apply some of the information we get over this season, in which many teams are sandbagging us. And we've seen this with title-defending teams before. Remember the Rockets, the repeat Rockets, the never, you know, don't underestimate the heart of a champion. The flip side of what Rudy Tomjanovich was saying is, hey, we really were kind of bad this season, and then we pulled it out and started trying. And you've seen this with the Laker team. After they crushed everybody, then slip into something like 20th in defense and then roll in everybody in the playoffs. I believe the Heat are conserving energy. And even though the Pacers look great now, a lot of that is because they're going full bore and the Miami Heat are not.
Yeah, it's hard for me to feel the same exact way about the Heat. It's just they're just waiting and waiting. And the difference maybe for me in the Heat is what energy will Dwayne Wade have in a legitimate dogfight.
His knees might be shot, and that's a concern. I just can't claim to know the extent of damage to his knees. I can tell you that he's been good when he plays. He's been good, and they've gotten almost an optimal result from this whole Odin and Beasley situation. So there's this doubt that injury casts over them, and not being a doctor and not having access to the medical files on his knees, I'll just assume that he'll be relatively what we've seen of Dwayne Wade.
Absolutely. Well, Ethan, that's all we have for today, man. We appreciate you so much being on our pod for kind of a warm-up for tonight's fun regular season game. Remember, all of our listeners, you can follow Ethan at Sherwood Strauss on Twitter, and follow him also through ESPN, the True Hoop Network, and Bleacher Report. Thanks, Ethan.
I want to cut it there. No Bleacher anymore, but ESPN, no Bleacher, by all means. No Bleacher.
Whatever happens, don't go to Bleacher Report.
Yeah, don't do it. I'm just kidding. There's some good stuff on there. Howard Beck is doing great things, but I'm no longer there. But thank you for the plug, and thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Perfect, Ethan. Thanks, man.
Peace.